Hey, people. This is episode 128. This episode is super special because it's one of my good friends who finally came on the podcast, and he came on with a purpose. Probably the first friend that come on with a real purpose because, you know, like when Dwayne and Hikus and all those guys come on and we were just drunk. That's not to say we weren't a little buzzed last night, but Aaron is a newly published author, Waking the Weaver, a Timberhaven novel. You can find it, and we talk about it in the episode, but you can find it in Amazon. You can find it on Barnes & Noble for the digital copy, a hard copy like I have. You can find it wherever on the interwebs that you can find it. That's not true, but you can find it a lot of places. Just listen to the episode. We didn't get to do like the board gaming and stuff that we wanted to for the camera. We did manage to play a board game later, which called Clank, which I had a blast with, and I'm not supposed to tell anybody that the flop actually enjoyed. And it was a good night. It was fun catching up with Aaron. We haven't hung out in a while, and I'm super proud to have a friend that's out there pushing a book. You know, and we talk in this episode, we got another buddy that's doing well in the publishing world, and that's Daniel Moeller. I'll link everybody. Oh, side note, too. As before we even get started, we went to sponsor the show, Beer Sauce Shop, 318 Mid Rivers Mall Drive. And go check them out. Something that just was cool about them is I was talking to Rick, one of the owners, a couple days ago, and he said that in the 9 months they've been open, almost 9 months they've been open, they have 1,300 individual beer SKUs. That means they've had, at one time or another, the equivalent of 1,300 beers. That's unbelievable, but that's what you get there. What I also got there was we ran into the guys from the Cerebro Entertainment podcast. A couple of them, we were introduced to each other by Dave. Uncle Dave's a great dude, works at the Beer Sauce Shop. He said, hey, you guys need to talk. Reached out to them, so we'll be reaching out to them and doing something together in the future, which is kind of cool. So big shout out to them, and it was cool talking to you. But all that said, outside of the Beer Sauce Shop, you also need to remember that the My Bomber Jackets. Head to www.mybomberjackets.com. Use promo code RAPCAST15. Save yourself 15% on your entire purchase. Also, we mentioned him in the episode a handful of times. Our good friend Josh Roberts still has the Cave Con going on in September. We'll be there. Aaron's going to be there, so you get to. And I believe he's doing a signing in June at Comics Cave in Springfield. So a lot of stuff going on for him. So you're going to hear about the book, how he got the book published, where his inspirations and all that good stuff coming from. And you're going to hear that in about 3 seconds. 2, 1.
Maheen stood before me with her hand outstretched. I must apologize. Where are my manners? My name is Maheen. Yes, I've heard your name many times of late. I took her hand and shook it. All of your new stories kept me from having an audience for bartered figs. I smiled. I'm Michael. Ah, yes, the new weaver, she said, picking up a small satchel that lay by the barrel. I would have saved a few of my tales back had I known you'd be beginning. How are you finding the position? Well, I hope. Not much to find yet. I'm still trying to get my footing. It's all in the storytelling, she began. And trust me when I tell you this, as I've traveled the world sharing stories, Timberhaven may well be the richest city in the world so far as stories to tell. Oh, of that I'm sure. We began to walk and talk. And I'm trying my best to keep up with the eccentricities of this place. But you're distracted by your own story, Maheen interrupted. I mulled that over for a bit. I guess that I am. I'm here to finish writing a novel I've been having trouble with. That's not what I mean, Maheen said, smiling. Creativity, imagination, these are not your problem. What do you mean by that? I'm not suggesting that you aren't stuck with your work, she began, only that I've told stories my entire life, like my mother before me and her mother before her, and I've learned that everything in life comes down to story. We are each of us the center of our own piece, while simultaneously bit players in the acts of other people. She sat down on a low rock wall and pulled an apple from her satchel. I'm a stranger sitting in front of you eating an apple, she took a bite, and we're in Timberhaven. Outside of the rich dichotomy inherent in a city continually reinventing itself, here you have a Terran reality as well, one that pulls at every thread of your mind the closer you get to it, dragging your every dark thought, every secret, kicking and screaming into the bright light of day. Like I said, I'm a storyteller too, before anything else, so I get it. How could you not be distracted? I sat down on the wall next to Maheen, thinking. She continued munching on her lunch. Finally, I said, but I don't have a secret. "You may not be keeping a secret," she said, pulling a sandwich bag from her satchel and putting the uneaten half of her apple into it. "But that isn't the same thing as not having one."
Hey, and we're back. And you just heard a little bit of the new book that we're, the reason we're here today, Waking the Weaver, a Timberhaven novel by the guest I'm going to get to in a minute. But before I get to that guest, there's only three of us in the room, counting the guests. The first person on my left, as always, which may change soon, we were just talking about that, would be the lovely Flop.
Hey, people aren't going to care how we sit.
My wife. Yeah, but see, I always introduce it in the certain order, so I'm about to change
you
it.
You can still do that with however we sit, though. People won't know.
We may have one fan, and just one, that is so anal about how we do things in an episode, it may cause them to lose their mind and go shoot up a post office or something.
Well, that seems a little harsh, but okay.
It's a world we live in. That said, no Badger, no Bender. By the way, I used in our last podcast, Bender and the Badger, to which Bender tweeted out that he needs to either do a morning radio show with Bender, or with Tom called that.
Yeah.
Or maybe they need some their own spinoff podcast called Bender and the Badger.
Oh, I thought he said they were going to be detectives or
something. Oh, that's it, a detective agency. Both slam dunk ideas. Both slam dunk. But that said, with me right now, I'm just going to go ahead and introduce him, Mr. Aaron Conaway. And normally I don't tell people, like, hey, here's your last name and first name on the episode, but hey, stardom's in your future. You're just going to have to deal with it.
Yeah, I don't know about that.
Yeah. So, two reasons you're here. One, you're, those that don't know, and I was trying to put a time frame on this. So, you're one of my, I consider you one of my closest friends, even though we don't talk as much as, say, me and Hao Pao do and stuff. But you, and I don't think that you and I were necessarily became friends in the height of our, we weren't at the top of our game when we became friends.
Sure.
But you're obviously one of my closest friends in terms of pop culture and geek culture. And I was trying to figure out when we became friends. I think it's been almost 16 years, 15 years.
Well, let's see. I was 29.
Were you 29? How old are you now?
It was right before my 30th birthday, so it's...
No, that's not... See, it was a couple years before that, wasn't it?
No, it was just prior. See, I had known you for like maybe 3 or 4 months when I was like, hey, I'm having a birthday.
Oh, see, I thought it was for that. I didn't think I was working for the store in which we met.
Yeah, because the first conversation we had, you were at the in the back room of Vintage Stock doing something.
Yeah, so you see, that's when we started hanging out. And I was there in Kansas City for 2 years at that store, and then I left.
Well, you weren't working at the store when I first talked to you. You were in my store.
Yeah, but I don't.
On 135th.
But if I was in the back room, I was still an employee. And I think we were together from like year 28 on.
Okay.
I do. I mean, it's been a long time. That's a long time.
Yeah,
ago.
Yeah, we're over a year or two.
Yeah, I know we're discrepant, but so. I mean, it's in the teens. I think.
Yeah, it's
almost.
Definitely in the teens.
Yeah. So we've been together. And we hit it off right away just because of our similar interests and stuff of that nature. And that bred the 10 plus year relationship that we have, to the point where some of my best friends, even before we met, are very good friends, and Dusty, Hao Pao, Dwayne even, you know, it's but true. You know, he's a lovable guy. Who can hate Dwayne?
Sure.
Even
there are times.
Yeah. Even Carter, which is easy to hate, but we still love him. But
I don't hate Carter.
Yeah, well, no girls do because he's a part of your clique. He's a part of your female clique.
Yeah.
So that said, one of the reasons you're here, other than the fact that we're old friends, is you have recently became a published author, which is what we're going to jump into. But you know, and I think literally I told you that normally I write bullet point scripts for this, not like word for word scripts, because that'd be anal retentive and controlling, sure. And I'm just not that guy. But I normally write down what we're going to talk about. I didn't need that with you because you and I, you got into town a little earlier today, and unfortunately, I saw what was going to happen. This happens all the time. This is the worst part about having your friends on the podcast, is I haven't seen you in a while, and we instantly start using all the good material for the podcast.
Right out the gate.
Yeah, right out of the gate. So I made, and you got cognitive of it, and we were kiboshing all of our conversation there, so we could have it right now.
Do you remember anything that you kiboshed?
That doesn't matter. We'll get back into it. And inadvertently, we'll revisit those conversations, which will be more organic, and that's what we're all about here.
Okay.
Orgasms.
Is that how that works?
No.
Okay, that's
not the same thing.
That, oh, okay. Wordplay. You know, that you're the author. I don't know. that said, I do want to jump into the book right out of the gate because you are now, like we mentioned a while ago, the book is Waking the Weaver, a Timberhaven novel. And for, I want to, there are a couple of questions I want to ask. First off, for as long as I've known you, and I want to tie back into that, I don't know that I can remember when you uttered the words, I am or I want to be a writer. When did that happen for you?
Oh, man. Yeah, that was long before we met.
Yeah.
When he came out of the womb, man.
Pretty much. Telling stories. It would have been in my preteens.
So, junior high school?
Elementary school.
Elementary school.
So you like the creative writing when that was like one
yeah,
of
yeah,
your,
yeah.
Well, what,
your jams in school.
What right. attracted you to the writing? Obviously, I know it was your love of literature, and I know you have a huge love, especially emphasis on horror and fantasy.
Inclusion of, yeah, I mean, it's broad. I mean, yeah, it's not just horror, but I definitely have a
What was your earliest memory of when you were like, this is it?
This is what I want to do.
Or at least this is my what attracts me to it.
Right.
I mean, I'm sure you loved it well before you knew you were going to do it.
Sure. I mean, I've always told stories. So, like, even as a kid, getting out of trouble, I would make up stories. So
fabricate what
right,
happened.
Right.
Was it believable?
It got me out of trouble.
So you've been weaving.
It's done all right.
I believe, I think Carter and I were talking about this too yesterday. I believe your Twitter says, I weave yarns, or what is it?
Teller of Tales.
Teller of
Weaver
Tales.
Of Tales. Yeah. Weaver, yeah.
So you've been good at that since day one? Since you
pretty much
needed to?
Yeah, since I needed to, right.
And I do know some backstory. We don't need to get into the backstory.
Right,
I know you are a troublemaker, a little bit.
Like
all of us, because we're boys.
Right.
And grew up in middle America, small town America, where you do get in trouble.
Well, it's boredom is rough.
So let me get more specific. What was the first author that really hooked you?
Huh. Wow. Probably Tolkien.
Okay. Yeah. I assume if someone was to ask me who was the first guy that hooked AC, my Tolkien or King would have been my two. Two guesses. And we've spent a good amount of the day talking about Stephen King books and stuff like that, too.
King's definitely an influence. Tolkien, I just love.
So was it Hobbit or Lord of the Rings?
Hobbit was the first thing I read.
Yeah, me too. I bet I read that book 3 or 4 times before I even grasped the concept that I loved a book. Because it was like assigned literature when I was in grade school.
Yeah.
And I remember reading it a handful of times before middle school or junior high where I grew up. And I was like, oh, I get it. I like books. That's a thing I'm into.
Right.
And I didn't even know it. So for me also, I think my gateway drug, so to speak, was fantasy novels. Like the idea of sword and sorcery. And, you know, my wife knows this, especially with Dwayne. We share this huge geek that probably more accepted now than it ever has been. But definitely for the longest time, the closet geek affliction of role-playing games.
Right.
And that's probably what made me so into fantasy.
Yeah.
So when did you think in your head, though, what was it that made you think, I'm going to write?
Probably role play. Probably D&D. Like, I would DM a lot as a kid. And just that world building aspect.
Yeah, I get that. And for those that have not, you know, obviously there's going to be a good chunk of people that haven't read the book yet. I think that's... Through your writing that I've read, it's one of my favorite parts. You're not so much in love with the character as much as you are the entire environment that's around that character, and that's we were talking to someone earlier. I'll give him a shout out because it was the first time I met him in person. A couple of the guys from the Cerebral Entertainment podcast, Adam, and I apologize, I can't remember the other guy's name, but Adam was who I talked to the most. When I told you pulled out of your description of what it was, and I said my description of everything you've ever written from day one was you seem to be a blended, like, if I can, like, I can see the wheels behind the machine, what's turning it, it's the Gaiman King influences on your book, and that's something that Gaiman is 100% his bag is creating a world
and
his stories. And so you, so goddamn, for as long as I've known you, I think it was, when did Timberhaven come into play?
So probably late 09, I had gotten into the world of blogging and sharing stories that way. And I had had pitches over the years of trying to sell short stories and whatnot. And I had a few books in the works, but I had a lot of characters that I didn't know
what to
do with. Yeah, I just, they popped in, they were talking, but they didn't jive with anything. So I just kind of started to collect them in this blog. At that point, it was called Unfamiliar Magic. And I built a little town of Timberhaven for them to live in. And once enough of them collected there, they started kind of telling their own story, which is where Waking the Weaver came from.
Yeah, that was back in the day. I think you were the first person to turn me onto WordPress. I think it was that where your
That's Unfamiliar where it was. Magic yeah. was.
I remember the Unfamiliar. I thought that was a great name too.
Yeah. The problem, I would have stuck with that, but there is already a book called Unfamiliar Magic.
No shit. So, what's it about? Yeah, you know?
I have no idea, but I do know it's a teen book and it's in geez. The, yeah.
I thought it was it sounded to me like the third book in the Practical Magic series when you said it that way. And it could be wrong. By the way, Practical Magic was maybe the greatest mandate I've ever had with Hal Pal.
I heard the tale.
And we only chose that movie because they didn't wear bras throughout the entire film.
Oh, jeez.
I know. We're transparent people, Melissa. We don't need much. So you've been working on this book since 09.
Right.
And
well, at that point, I didn't know it was a book. Unfamiliar Magic was just a fun place to showcase my stories.
You didn't know you were on the way to writing a book right. yet.
Not that book. Not Waking the Weaver.
What was your first book you tried to write?
So the very first book was a fantasy that was a collection of the stories that I had done in D&D. It was like 6 years worth of games that I was building into a series of novels. And my computer crashed and I lost everything.
Oh, Jesus.
The whole
Christ.
Book was gone. And it was like.
There was no such thing as a cloud then.
Yeah, it was horrible. It was a bad time. Then this has been my. I mean, that was. That all crashed in, maybe 2000, 2001.
Oh, then, wow. So there was that big a gap.
Yeah, before I could even bring myself to.
I was going to say, you were that
book.
Disheartened.
Yeah, it was horrible to lose all of that. And so then I started, I'll just do short stories. I'll just try to submit short stories here and there. And I never really, I didn't get any traction. I never got anything published there. I did win a contest once for a short story on an online thing.
No, that was since we were friends. I think I remember that.
Yeah, that was 2011, 2010.
Which story was that?
It wasn't even a story, really. It was called Clock Watching. It was just a little 200-word snippet for a friend of mine was having a birthday contest, and she gave, what was the prompt? It's only a number was the prompt. And I just entered it. 200 words was the limit. And I just wrote this little snippet and sent it in and won second place.
Well, and that's something I think that it's important for people. And, Hal Pal once when we would all hang out, and I don't want this to come out the way it sounds. When you would say that, hey, I'm a writer, and Hal Pal would always say, well, you know, a writer has to write. And
sure.
And you, God, I don't know how long it's been, but even before this book started, I can tell you there was a from the time you did Unfamiliar Magic, and then probably I think to when you won that thing. I remember when you won, that's when, like, from the moment you won that thing, not that was necessarily the catalyst, but I think from that point on is when I thought, my Aaron's kicking out enough stuff. He's fucking writing. That's what he's doing.
Yeah, I was doing it. Yeah, I had, at that time, and for a few years, I did, there was a segment called Flash Friday, where you'd write a flash
piece. Oh, I like those.
Piece,
I enjoyed those.
Which were 1,000 words or less, and you did that once a week. And I did that for a good couple of years. And then
I think what I liked about those, as I remembered those, what I liked about those is there were some times where I could see, again, because I'm so close to the fire on this one, you're being a good friend, I could see behind the curtain. I could see ones where not necessarily that you put more thought in, but ones that I could see when you didn't have as much time to think about them, and you had to get them out.
Right.
And I think I like those the most because I could see they were your most raw.
Yeah, they were definitely more stream of consciousness. Like, okay, I'm just going to...
Well, done. That's our conversations over the years. Yeah. It's been like, let's just diarrhea of the brain.
Right.
And that's what I liked about them. I remember my favorite story, maybe still my favorite story this day, was the children's story you wrote. Gosh darn, I wish I could tell you...
Oh, the one where the boy is going to catch a moo?
I can't remember
the
now.
Cows, it's a bit, he's convinced the cows have...
Like, I think that's it. It's a few years ago now.
It was Absent Hobbs is what it was called. Yeah, it's been a long time ago. It was like 2012.
And I remember you saying that when you wrote it, you weren't... It wasn't your... It's not your genre. It wasn't what you were
well,
into.
Well, it wasn't my perspective, definitely. Yeah. Like, I didn't know anything about children, and I didn't... I mean, I had nieces and nephews, but...
Wait! I don't mean to interrupt, but you guys never grow up, so you're still
fair enough. Fair enough.
You're still children.
Yeah. There you go. So maybe that's what it was. Maybe I just kind of sat down and played.
But, yeah, and that may be the best point. I mean, I think that at the time, neither of us. Although I may have been already here and been
in
with
2012?
You. Oh yeah, that's when it was. Yeah. So that's I was here with you. So, yeah. So what I think maybe the reason that one worked so well for me is because one, maybe you didn't have. Not emotional, because I feel like you put a lot of your heart into your stories. But I think maybe you were like, maybe your most unhinged, I guess. You weren't worried about the outcome of that story. You wrote that story, maybe. But,
yeah.
But it was a subject matter that you didn't, like, bear hug. So right. When you, and I remember telling you, and I think, was Lauren even your wife at the time?
In 2012, yes.
Yeah, okay, so I even remember her saying that was her favorite story at the time, too.
Well, she and Dusty, our mutual friend, both are big fans of my writing children and basically the more innocent characters that are, they have their own kind of...
Naivete, or...
Yeah, well, and just road in life that they're on, like the whimsy that comes from knowing who they are and... doing their own thing.
And so at that time when you were writing that, and I think whimsy was the best word for it, but at that time where you were, and forgive me because we drink a lot.
Sure.
So and I know, so was Timberhaven already in the process?
At that point, Unfamiliar Magic was already going.
Well, I knew Unfamiliar Magic was, but had you already determined, hey, I've got a world here?
Yeah. When Unfamiliar Magic started getting traction... I realized, okay, cool, I can play here. This is a cool little sandbox. And Unfamiliar Magic started, that's when I realized, around that time is when I realized this is, I can do something with this clay. Like, this is, this. I enjoy being here, people seem to react to this.
What's that feel like? Because that's a eureka moment for an author, I gotta assume.
It is, but it's also... Crap, somebody's actually reading, like somebody's actually paying
it's
attention
scary.
To this. Yeah.
Like so there's a euphoria and a panic.
Right,
all
right,
at the same
right.
Time.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. Boy, God, I tell you, what I love about, you know, the fact that the book is published and I have a copy upstairs is the fact that I saw the genesis of it and I saw this. But man, there is a significant time between it.
Yeah.
And I don't know what the average is. I know, I got to imagine for an author's first published book, this is not the exception. But right. But did how long did it feel like for you to go from point A to, and not even point B? I mean, we're like point F or G for you in terms of this
we've
book.
We've left the 26-letter alphabet at this point.
we're in the Roman numerals.
Yeah. I mean, from the point of Unfamiliar Magic?
Yeah, I mean, it seems like an eternity.
It's it's from Unfamiliar Magic days. It's there's characters that aren't even named the same thing. There's extra stuff that's been edited a dozen times. It's been a lot of stages between those early days and now.
So before we drink too much more, though, I feel like we'd be remiss not to give someone a hook real quick. And with the exception of you were going to, I just said we're using editing magic here because before we start this conversation, you will have read a excerpt from the book. But if you were to give someone Like, I heard you do this earlier, and you felt you butchered it. I thought you did a fine job.
Okay.
And I only felt like you butchered it.
We've been drinking a little while, so I didn't know.
Yeah, I only felt like you butchered it just because I saw you say it and then instantly regret what you said, or at least question what you said.
Right.
So what is Timberhaven? Or what is
Timberhaven or Waking the Weaver? So Waking the Weaver is about a best-selling horror author who is stuck in his latest book, and he can't get out of the block. And his sister has recently died. He drinks way too much. I mean, he's definitely a functioning alcoholic. And so he's come to this small Midwestern town to finish the book, just to get away from everything, to figure it out. And what he doesn't know is that in his over-libating, he has stumbled across a secret. He subconsciously knows a horrible thing. And he comes to Timberhaven, which, unbeknownst to him, has a terror in reality in the woods that surround this small town. And that terror is festering a kind of psychic energy that pulls the worst emotions from people, and that includes their deepest, darkest secrets. And so that all kind of comes to a head when he comes to the town.
Okay, so I asked you to give me that, and I instantly said Timberhaven first, and you said, well, Timberhaven or Waking the Weaver. So what's Timberhaven to you?
Timberhaven is everything, the extra parts outside of Michael, who Michael Gideon is the best-selling author that comes to town, the protagonist in the book.
And that hasn't changed. That's been like Michael Gideon's.
Well, yeah, Michael Gideon's always. So what's weird is when I was a kid, I was going to write with a surname, with a pen name.
Yeah.
Michael Gideon was going to be my pen name. And so
you were mocking me into this shit like right out of the gate.
Oh, it went very quickly into a meta being John Malkovich place where I was going to, I mean, eventually I think I will write some horror novels as Michael Gideon.
So you're that, and so I mean, 99% of our listeners know what meta means,
right,
in terms of storytelling. So you're going to go that meta with it, in theory.
That's the loose idea. Game plan, yeah. Yeah.
That's kind of cool.
Yeah,
I mean, not awesome. Kind of. That is cool.
Well, thank you.
Gosh darn it, and we sidetracked you on what Timberhaven was.
But. Oh well, yeah. So Timberhaven, yeah, basically is a small Midwestern town that. It, for whatever reason, has a terror in reality, and strange things happen in it, and story writers and artists in general, in particular, are drawn to it.
And so, you know, and I don't think this is a surprise to most people, but whether you're doing comedy, writing serious novels, writing fiction novels, you usually take from what's yours in life. So you based Timberhaven loosely over growing up in the Midwest.
Right, sure.
Okay, well,
go ahead.
This feels kind of familiar because Stephen King uses dairy, right?
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah,
so
yeah.
So
yeah, he uses not just
dairy. So Timberhaven is kind of similar to dairy?
So
is that how you're explaining it?
It's more, so okay, there's Stephen King's a massive influence and like, hand and set. You can definitely see that in the DNA of my writing along with Neil Gaiman. But Charles DeLint is a huge influence on me as well. And he has a town called Newford that his story, not all of them, but a lot of his short stories and a lot of his novels take place in. And it's just kind of a shared little world where these characters interact.
And for those, not to draw too many comparisons to Stephen King, but if you want to look for the literal television explanation of it, Castle Rock, the upcoming Castle Rock show.
Right.
Which Castle Rock is Stephen King's entertainment company, and that's where the new show. So a lot like that. But what I think more importantly than to draw that comparison to him, the town in of itself is a character.
Yes.
That have a lot of unique characters attached to it. And that's important. I think that's very important to know going into it. That's because, like you said, this is Waking the Weaver, which is a Timberhaven novel, which let you know that there's going to be more in this world that may not necessarily include Michael Gideon.
Right. Yeah, no, there's definitely... Well, and when you read Waking the Weaver, there's a lot of moving parts that don't always have a payoff in Waking the Weaver. Like, you see glimpses of a world that Michael's got other things going on. He doesn't underscore.
If there... And again, to draw it back to television, and when you... I know you weren't, because you haven't really watched it as much as I have in the past, but... It's very much David Lynch-ish with Twin Peaks. And that's another part of it that I thought. Like, there's all these characters going on that have so much more story that has to do with anything other than the main character. And so, and for instance, I think, and again, I'm blank because we drink a little bit today, but possibly one of the more, Juniper, maybe one of the most liked characters from your story, right?
That's true. And she's not even, she's in this book for... She's name dropped basically in Waking the Weaver. She's not in it, but Juniper Soot, yes, is definitely one of my more popular creations.
And she appears more, and like we talked about this earlier. And you're not you're maybe on the close to stopping these for a little bit, but you've got these Friday companion pieces for those that like the book
right.
or are going to read the book. Also, search out where can they find these. What we're about to talk about.
Well, all of the I've always had not always, but. For the last almost year, I've had Fridays in Timberhaven on my Facebook page, Timberhaven. And the recently, since the book came out, I had Fridays in Timberhaven / Before the Weaver. So it's all character point of views that from characters that were in the book that before Michael shows up in town in the book. And that's on aaronconaway.me.
Yeah, and that would be where a good chunk... And for those the things that exist outside of Timberhaven and all these other stores and stuff, that you're going to put those off in there for here to eternity, right?
Right.
Yeah. So that's worth it.
Well, and Juniper stars in the next book, the sequel right. that's in the... Well, it's not... It actually takes place 9 months prior to Waking the Weaver, but called Monsters in the Park, and she's one of the main protagonists in that.
But it will be... influential to the whole overall story that you're telling.
Yeah.
Which is tricky. I mean, that's a tricky way to tell a story.
Yeah. But I mean, ideally, I dig the mosaic approach to where there's this huge...
The Memento Tarantino style of storytelling for those that want to tie it to a film. Something tangible they can see.
Yeah, well, more like a... I don't know, it's like a piece of art, but there's like little snippets... That make a.
They a may whole not piece. Make sense by themselves, but when
well,
you
hopefully
see them
they
together,
do. Hopefully they do make sense. Well, I mean, like their entire, there's
like
a story
see it
entire.
Like if you see it up close, you're like, whoa, that's just a bunch of paint. You back up, and it's the whole big picture.
Yeah. And
like that.
Yeah, and it's like each book will be a self-contained. You'll get a beginning, middle, and end story, but
it will move the overall story on.
Right.
Yeah.
If anything, it's more like I mean, another huge influence is comics, and so it's each book will be. Part of the whole. Like there's a universe there and there's a lot of things going on, but each book, while self-contained, does produce a huge, you know, a massive epic.
So we'll get back past what's in store on the next book and when you're gonna start that first. But let's I feel like there's a lot of people that probably are listening to this, but probably I know a good chunk of people that I've had said maybe I could write at one point or another, but take me through. So when I remember when you sent out this. When did you send us out that rough PDF downloadable copy? That was
the beta.
The beta, yeah.
The beta
feels
read.
Like a long time.
That was
ago.
A long time ago because I finished the book.
Well, I think that's important for people listening that want to publish or self-publish or get published
right.
or whatever.
You're not going to wake up tomorrow and write a book and
and it's going to be out the next week.
Well, but
you're
that's kind of the problem with self-publishing is that you can. You could literally just. Throw, I mean, because it doesn't cost anything, particularly, I mean, I did it through Amazon and CreateSpace, and I didn't do, like, I did have a cost because I wanted to be able to sell it anywhere, but if you didn't want to, if you just wanted to strictly sell it.
It was like a digital copy.
A digital, if you just wanted to go digital, didn't even want to do a paperback, literally in 5 minutes, if you already had something written, you could upload it to Amazon KDP and slap a cover on it, figure out what you wanted to sell it for, hit go. They do take like, I don't know, I think it was like a day, maybe 2 days, to make sure that you weren't doing like some weird porn
they review
thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Thing, yeah.
And then as soon as you checked all those boxes, you were live.
So how did you get to the point where you're like, this is it, I'm going to publish this?
I didn't want to slap it together and throw it. I wanted something that I could sell and build on.
For lack of a better way, you wanted to be a real author.
Right. And that's not to say people that have written stuff that they didn't do all the due diligence aren't real authors, but...
But there's a lot of people out there.
I wanted a steady career. Like, I want to make a career of this. So I wanted it to look good and read good. And so I finished the first draft, which that is what took forever. I sent it to friends to beta read it to find like
some of the friends were better than others. How Powell's one of the best.
He did very well. Dusty did very well. My wife did very well.
I want to get into that with your wife too, real quick too, because one of the advantages you have is you've got a live-in editor.
I do.
Someone with experience at doing
that's true.
That kind of stuff.
Right.
So, but, you know, in order to get a little jokes, I mean, that's got to also be a pain in the ass, right?
We've definitely had conversations that weren't a little sideways where she would have a note and I didn't agree with that note.
To be honest with you, the better she is at editing, the worse the conversations
are
probably.
Yeah, it's a tough thing when you when she's got the editor hat on, she's strictly business and it's like, this doesn't work.
I don't care that we're sleeping next to each other. Right. You're going to get this shit together.
Fix this, yeah. So,
and that's Lauren. For those that don't know, that's Lauren.
Yes, that is my wife, Lauren.
Yeah, and we'll link her too. When I put up the explanation for the episode, I'll link both of you too, because I feel like, and like I said, I've known you for a long time. And hey, cards on the table for those people. He met Lauren on my bachelor party. So he owes his relationship.
That's a story in and of itself.
He owes it to Dwayne, but by extension, me. But still,
why not me? I'm the one that said yes.
That's true. She was the reason we were there.
I guess you owe it to Missy. I only got married without me. But I've told people many times on this podcast, I've got a good family. I love my family, but my friends and you are definitely when I was explaining to people about you coming on, I say there's good friends and there's inner circle friends. And if there was a better way to say this, I don't know how to, but I would literally hide a body. You called me up tomorrow, said, come to Kansas City. I need you to help me hide a body. I'm on my way. But that's how close of friends we are. Whether we talk every week like me and Pal or not, you're one of my best friends. And so that said, I know I can say this by seeing it. You would not have had this book published if it wasn't for meeting Lauren. I feel that way because I feel like you...
It wouldn't be this book, yeah.
And I almost feel like, and this is my opinion,
right,
that you wouldn't have a book published because I feel like not just the fact that she's an editor, I think there was a certain amount of inspiration that came.
Yeah, she's your cheerleader.
Yeah.
And I certainly saw the nose to the grindstone increase after you guys met.
Right.
I mean, also, and this is not... I mean, you also... Not that you lost anything, but... Like we talked about, I always plug them in the opening. Comic Cave down in Springfield, and Comics CaveCon coming up in September. Our good buddy Josh Roberts, he was one of our best friends.
Sure,
he
still is.
Yeah. But I mean, we were all living there,
right?
Which did not help you write.
Yeah.
So we all left.
Right.
You still had Daniel, and I want to get into Daniel a little bit, too, because, by God, if that some bitch is not going to promote himself as much as we are, we'll help, whether he wants to or not. So you had a lot of people leave. You still had good friends like Eric, who we've never talked about on the podcast, but a good dude, and Daniel there. But having Lauren there was the influence you needed that wasn't us. You know what I mean? She was like...
Well, what's interesting is not... It's her influence isn't so much... What are you doing today? What are you doing? Produce. It was she is very ambitious. Like she has, I'm going to go get this. Like, what's the next level? What's next? And that wore off.
And she also,
that's the influence.
And she also from day one saw the best in you that, I mean, that you probably didn't even really want to admit. I mean, she saw the best possible version of you when it comes to creating.
That's true. Well, I would argue across the board, but yeah
but definitely, I mean, in terms creating, of this
yeah,
book.
She definitely, yeah, I mean, it's...
You're happiest when you're putting content out, and she saw that right out of the gate.
Right. Well, and I like to impress her, and it's not super easy to do with writing.
But that's a good goal.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, I think it's Kevin Smith, guy, a person we, you know, grew up, that was, we were in the breadbasket of that.
Sure.
He said the first thing he did was to write to make his friends happy.
Right. Yeah,
and that's sometimes that's the hardest crowd when they're honest, and
right,
she's honest.
Right? Yeah, no, she's, that's what I mean. She
pain in the ass.
I've got to go home. So.
She's gonna listen to after. You'll already
be. Yeah, that's
already
true.
Know.
I'll be there. Yeah. So, I love you.
Yeah. So you know, but that's it. And the other thing about, you know, going down the self-publishing tangent is it wasn't just that. You up on a whim and said, I'm going to look into self-publishing. We did have a friend that literally saw the roadblocks and stuff before you even did it, and that's our friend Daniel Moeller,
yeah,
who just released, what's his next book called? You know?
I don't remember.
I can tell you this, it's number one on Amazon when it comes to
right?
Kabbalah and mysticism.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's in the title too, but he may kill me because I don't remember the title, but it's got both of those words in it.
Well, so, but Moeller did start by writing straight fiction.
He did. Red Mass was his first published book, and
so
he ended up self-publishing
it. And you
as
had
well.
Someone to talk to about it.
I did. And someone to learn from both the strong strides that he made and the mistakes that he made.
And I remember when he was doing that. He struggled formatting that. He bitched constantly.
Yeah. No, he wasn't a big fan of the formatting. He wasn't, he's not a good self-promoter. He's not a fan of self-promoting.
How about Shamanic Kabbalah, a mystical path to using the tree of life and the great work. That's,
see, I knew it had Kabbalah.
That's
a, I knew it
that's
had
a lot
mysticism
of words.
Hey, in our defense, that's a lot of words.
That's, yeah. I figured Daniel Moeller, like, just search that on Amazon, you'll be
and
all
that's
right.
That's exactly how I found it.
See?
Yeah, so he, like you said, you learned the traps and landmines, not just traps and landmines, but you learned where the robot, you knew where they were coming from.
Right.
And for instance, Daniel's the perfect example too, because he did Red Mass,
right,
self-published. Did he do that second one self-published?
Oracle, yeah.
Oracle
was his graphic novel, and he self-published that as well.
And now he has a book deal.
He does.
So, you know,
I think in somewhat due to the world that this is a nonfiction book. Like, this is a study and
oh yeah,
he's used different avenues, but yeah, I mean, part of the reason he was so happy to go the traditional publishing route was all of the pitfalls that he fell into with self-publishing.
But, and that's the thing. I was talking to this about Carter yesterday when we were talking about you coming on. The thing is in the world, especially in the world we're in now, the internet and how social media has grown and how all the avenues between YouTube and all that stuff for musicians to get famous, I feel like novels are now coming around to where there's a different way of doing it. You know, 20 years ago, even 10 years ago, you had to write a book, submit it to every single outlet in the world to see if they will sign you or produce a book.
Right.
You don't have to do that anymore. And that's not discrediting your first novel, but you can almost look at this first novel as like, hey, this is my calling card. This is my resume.
Sure.
For the second book,
right,
or the third book. And
right,
even if they have one to do with the other,
right,
kind of like what happened with Daniel,
yeah,
you have... There's work out there for people to see, not just your spec script or your novel or anything.
Or your blog, yeah.
Or your blog.
Yeah.
That's and even blog, you and I were talking about a very a common book that we enjoyed, John Dies at the End,
yeah,
which one of our friends turned me on to.
Mm-hmm.
Blogs are kind of disappearing a little bit.
Oh, they're definitely disappearing, yeah.
Yeah, a lot of it. But it's more, you know, but you can still find... This is a good way, and this is what Carter and I said. I said, this is a very good way, no matter how successful, if you see any financial windfall from this, and that's, I don't care if it's $1, $2, or $1,000.
Right.
Whatever you see from that is gravy going forward, because the meat and potatoes of it is you've published, you have that leverage for the next book, And you have a, you have, it's like, look, at least I have this audience.
I mean, this first one was anybody that bought it, I mean, this was strictly, this is my first book. Like, this was a...
It's got to start somewhere.
It's, yeah, I mean, I don't, all of this has just been a, I don't know, like a treat of, like a bucket list situation. It's just now starting into a, huh, maybe I'll... Maybe I could make a go at this, and maybe this could be what I do for a living.
And you and I talked on earlier about this, too, is like you've always wanted to do this for a living.
Oh, definitely.
And you gave yourself, uniquely gave yourself a time frame to your wife. She didn't impose this on you.
Right, right.
But you told her...
A year.
I'm going to give myself a year.
Right.
And if I'm done with this, I'm done chasing it.
Right.
Now, I've got a feeling that no matter how this year comes out, she's not going to let you stop chasing it.
I'm sure that's true.
But like you said, you can't, you literally can't. It's very hard to put a financial figure on how much time you've put into it. That's hard to recoup.
Sure.
But like you said, times when you were staying up while your wife was in bed, or whether you were ignoring her while she had a day off while you were writing,
right,
or editing, or whatever you were doing,
yeah,
that's hard to do. But you can honestly say that you are close, if not passing, recouping your just outright financial costs on this.
Right. No, at this point, I am very close. I mean, I haven't checked to see if I had any sales today, but yeah, I've the initial expense, I've pretty much recoup.
And I don't want to know the initial expense, but what I do want to know is I can't remember top of my head how long ago this went live for purchase to today.
The end of February is when it went live.
Okay, so you're looking at February to now,
like five weeks to recouping
what you can tangibly put out of pocket.
Right.
Now, I would argue, like you said, like I told you earlier, like you might be tens of thousands in time.
Right, right, right.
But don't look at it that
way. Well, the pitch to Lauren was not only do I want to recoup what I paid, but I want to be able to, ideally, I won't do the next book unless I have made enough money to pay for the next book, not out of pocket.
So how, based, let's just call it, let's say, because also, you know, we're going to give Daniel a little bit of shit here. You and I've told him this too when I was emailing him back and forth.
Yeah.
You're doing a better job self-promoting right out of the gate. And that said, this podcast may be just your first step at pushing that self-promotion out the gate.
As far as online, definitely.
Yeah, which is where we got to do it.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I've done the footwork. Like I've gone to bookstores to indie bookstores, but I, just so anybody listening knows, self-publishing through certain avenues are not, you're not going to get a lot of...
You brought this up earlier.
Yeah.
And I think there's no way around it other than say to the independently owned bookstores, and we have a very good one where I got that signed Neil Gaiman book.
Nice.
Up here called Left Hand. They aren't too keen, as great as those are, they're not too keen on the Amazon.
Well, and fair enough. Like,
and I get it.
It's definitely a detriment to their business model.
Yeah. But to your defense and to all the self-publisher defense, they also, and it's not their fault, but they also don't have an avenue to support the self-published person.
Because it's, you know, they've only got so much space to give to books, and if you know that they've got to be careful of what they are promoting, and if it's, they don't want to necessarily promote, certain bookstores don't necessarily want to promote something from Amazon because that's taking their money from their pockets.
Literally their biggest competitor.
And I'm not, by no means am I giving them any shit for that, but.
No, I understand. But like, you know, like we were talking, like the end game to be a published author, not self-published, but an overall publisher with a book deal.
Get into the machine.
But, that's it. And then probably they can go back and retro print your book and all that stuff, whatever. Right. But, So, that said, so you're doing this podcast, which we've been talking about for a little while. Then you're gonna coming up in June. You've got the Comics Cave, date to be determined.
Sometime in June, yeah.
We know for a fact September you will be be at CaveCon.
End of September, I will be at Cave.
And hopefully we can get together between this. You, not only do you have the book, you can link this where we talk about it. You can do whatever you need to, but hopefully you can get some stuff in between.
Right.
But you literally, taking a shot back at Daniel, he wasn't doing this legwork. So you're out there On his first book. On his first book.
On Red Mass, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I know he's done some
stuff. Yeah, Red Mass he wrote to write. He just wanted, he had a book. It's out. Yeah. Here you go.
Yeah, and I'm not, that's all I'm giving him crap for. Because he's done a very good job, and especially in the last 5 to 6 months, it's really amped his game up.
Right.
But you're doing that work, and we're doing.
It's a hustle, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And so hopefully that does grow, and that'll help. Like we said, that'll help. It can't go south, so.
Sure.
But. But based on all that,
right?
Where do you think, like, if you can look at how the chart, if you were charting the graph, let's use hard numerical fact,
right?
If you're charting the graph based on the projection you're at, when do you think you can honestly say, like, you know what, if things continue on this path, I think here, the way we're going, I should be able to write that second book and have it pay for it.
Oh, the second book's already being written.
Well, I know that,
regardless,
but
have this whole dream start to work?
Yeah.
It's going to depend on a couple of things. This summer is going to be pretty heavy, like, depending on how it grows.
And how much you have to do.
Right. Like, how much, you know, different shows and different appearances. And ideally come fall, I would have a second book drop, but it's looking more like it's going to be about the same time next year as it was this year. So
that's still end a of good February. Turnaround.
No, definitely.
I mean, from writing a book to releasing another book or having another book ready.
Yeah.
I mean, I guess the first one's your hard one. I mean, if Stephen King's a model for anything, once you get that first one out, you can just run downhill.
Right.
You
know? Well, yeah.
Unless you're George Martin. So right. Then you're taking your time.
Then you take 6 years,
so
7 years.
To dial it back a little bit, once you decided to self-publish, and you know, we've already touched on a little bit the difficulties, right. how many hours or how much work do you think you put into formatting and getting ready for what Amazon or, you know, had to do?
You mean between...
Like, once the book was done,
right,
and you knew
once
you were ready to upload...
Once I'd done the final edit
was
and
that like
uploaded
the,
it.
In your opinion, was that where the real work... And the reason I use the word work in quotations that no one can see, so it doesn't
right.
really work
Yeah,
out.
I keep nodding to you like people can see, but...
So you wrote, which is a labor of love.
Uh-huh.
But everything after that labor of love is done is actual fucking work.
Oh, everything after the first draft is work. Like, I can't read Waking the Weaver anymore because I've read it so many damn times and editing it. Like, I don't know. But from the point of deciding this is as good as I can make it, here you go, CreateSpace/Amazon. Are you asking, like, how long before?
Yeah, how long was it ready? How much of the headache did you go through to getting it ready to see print? And
it's zero. Like, they have it set up to a system. Like,
okay.
I said, you can upload it, slap a cover on it. And, I mean, that was actually quite agonizing for me as well because, contrary to the saying, books are completely judged by their cover.
Oh, yeah.
And so landing a cover that I was at least happy with took some time.
What's that movie we like with Zac Efron and Miles Tillis and Michael B. Jordan?
Oh, shit, I don't
they
remember.
Their
I don't
whole
remember.
Gimmick in that movie, which is a very underrated movie. It's one of those. It's one
like
of those,
a bro movie.
It's a bro movie, romantic comedy. But their job is they design covers for books, and they go to these meetings to pitch these books, and they're you see the stress because it's everything.
Yeah,
it's everything to the book is the cover.
It seriously, particularly on Amazon, where it's just scroll. I mean, it's like the dating app with the slide
swipe
left thing.
Tinder,
swipe left.
Tinder,
yeah, Tinder.
Right?
None of us know because
Grindr.
None of
for,
us need
for, you
that.
Know.
Never had to date.
Yeah,
yeah,
luckily
online.
We don't.
That's true.
I feel like it's a gift and a curse that we. For one thing, I feel like we're better people for having to put in the legwork and the phone calls to pick up on chicks
and actually talk to someone face to face.
I also feel like we missed out on a whole world of easy picking
swipe,
up a chick.
Swipe, swipe, swipe.
So. It wasn't as big. So I pictured, just from the headaches that Moeller had.
Yeah.
I pictured it being, but you had Moeller, so you knew
what
you were getting
to
before.
With Daniel, like, it, putting a book out is not, there is no difficulty. There's no, that time frame from whatever, 24 to 48 hours or whatever that they look it over to make sure that they want to sell it, that duration is the duration. Like, there's no, now, you can let it drop.
There's not like a guideline, try to stay adhere to these.
No.
I'll be
there's,
damn.
There's, no, it's upload here, put your cover here. How much do you want to charge for it?
So
here
you go. So let me ask you this, and this is overly technical. I get it. It's got nothing to do with the meat and potatoes of writing. But so did you have a guideline on setting the parameters of the page and the header and the footer and all that stuff?
Not really. I mean, there's basically...
So,
you get to look at it before it goes live to make sure it looks like it does.
Font size and everything.
I chose everything.
And that made a... I mean, because that obviously makes a difference on how many pages it is and produces stuff like that. Well, yeah,
definitely. And, I mean, it...
See, I could see me writing a book and that being my worst part is... Because the art major in me...
Yeah.
Picking the font size and the font and just... Oh, it'd be a headache. I would suffer over that.
It can't at that point, particularly with font size and page number and everything. It was, this doesn't matter as much to me. It looks good to read it. I'm good to go.
Yeah.
I want to be done with this part. The artwork for the cover did take me longer because I wanted it to look. Good.
I didn't
and
even
Bobby
ask
Birch,
you this.
Thank you for the shot.
Okay,
like that.
That's what I was about to say. Where'd you get the pick?
I but he is a friend of ours who Bobby Birch took the shot on a trip. He's a photographer who took the shot, I believe in Colorado, and the full picture is stunningly beautiful.
It works for the cover.
But I could only use like a little bit of it for the cover because the rest of it wouldn't fit.
But but it works for what you did because you did like a panoramic, small panoramic view of that picture with letterbox top and bottom, essentially.
Right. Yeah.
White top and bottom. You chose the color scheme and everything for that?
Right.
Yeah. That would be where I suffer. I could probably sit down and, not that it would be good, but I could sit down and come up with 200 pages of just BS and know that it would never see the light of day and I'd still stress over what it was going to look like on the cover.
Well, and that's what. I mean, I did have those moments, but you don't have to have those moments. Like a self-published author, you could just put a picture of your palm print if you wanted. Like, it doesn't matter. Like, they just want a picture for the cover and the book, and you're good. And they'll
publish it as
it can read horribly. And if you've bought any 99-cent books, there are certain books that on Amazon that were not well-edited because anybody can make a book.
Yeah. And they can get famous. You and I talked about this earlier. Anybody can write trash out there to become the next 50 Shades of Grey.
It's true.
You can do whatever fan fiction you want and get famous.
Yep.
What was Moeller? I can't remember. Was his one of his own art pieces was a cover? No, Red Mass wasn't. Red Mass was.
Red Mass, the original, the first edition was a staged photo that he took.
And I've got that one somewhere.
The second edition he had drawn.
That's what I remember that one.
That's working out better for him.
Well, I guess because maybe that, like you said, when you're scrolling down, that one at least pops more than
it does. It does because I looked at it. It stands out, the colors in it.
How good, though, another back to knowing that you had wrote, knowing that you finished a book, how good did it feel to actually see that first sale on Amazon?
Oh, it was amazing.
Now, do you know who the first sale was?
So I don't. So, okay, my mom actually had said since I was a kid that if I ever wrote a book, she wanted the first copy. And I said, you know, this is going digital and public. Like, yeah, I can't guarantee. The only way I can guarantee you the first copy is if you buy one, if you get one of my proofs. Because you get proofs to make sure it's going to look right.
Yeah.
And so I ordered two. One for me to actually make sure it looks good.
You're
and
good,
one
son.
For, right? So the first book that came out was for her. So she was my first sale. Now, outside of the proofs, I have no way of knowing. Like, once it went live,
no one told you. No one said, hey, I got the first copy or anything.
Well, and I don't think they would know. I mean, they're just clicking. So I would imagine it was one of the pre-sale ebooks.
Yeah.
But I don't. It could be Hal Powell. I know he was an early
ebook. I know he
got
the ebook, yeah.
He got, he got pre-sale too. So I don't.
How much was the ebook?
The ebook's $2.99.
And then the hard copy, which I have, is
$10.99.
Okay, I knew it was $10 or $12. I can tell you what, too. So let me ask you, too, if you know this. Do they print as purchase, or do they print like a stockpile?
No, it's print to order.
God, I tell you what, man. I ordered that fucking book on a Sunday, and I got it on Tuesday.
Really?
Yeah, Tuesday or Wednesday. It was not long, which blows me away.
See, it takes me like 11 days to get
author
copies.
So I wanted to take it to Chicago with me, so I'd had something to read when we went to Chicago. So that's when I decided, I got to knuckle down and get this before I forget.
Yeah.
It was 3 days.
Wow.
Amazon Prime.
Yeah.
So I wonder if they keep 5 to 10, 15, 20, whatever in the...
I mean, maybe, but from my end, it's print to order. So and
obviously, on their end, too, it's got to be whatever makes sense. I'm sure it's an adjusted equation, like, hey, this has sold X copies in 30 days, so we're going to keep half of that or whatever, you know. But because I gotta assume that it's cheaper to print 10 to 20 at a time than it is one at a time for them. But I was impressed by it. I was like, I ordered the book, it's fucking here, and that made me feel even better.
Yeah. Well, there you go.
So, yeah. You know what? Let's, and that's, I feel like one of the reasons I wanted you on too, because I feel like there's a whole world of people that think maybe I could be an author. I want to be an author. I want to know. And I don't know that we jumped too much into it, but hopefully it sounded like enough to where people are like, it sounded like I could do it.
Oh, it's definitely. Yeah. I mean, it's literally a matter of clicking. I mean, there are other avenues besides Amazon, but If you have a bucket list and you say, I have a book, I want to write it, I want to have it be tangible, I want to sell it, it's a matter of mouse clicks and you're good to go.
Yeah.
Well, and there's no, I mean, like I said, I did buy the ISBN so I could sell it elsewhere. But if you want it available only on Amazon,
you can just do
there's
that.
No cost.
So what is that? What entails real quick? Because I didn't even think of that. So the ISBN, what is?
The ISBN ran me $125.
That's not awful.
And that's just so I could sell it anywhere I wanted to. I have to get the...
And that actually works for like libraries and stuff too, because they always use the ISBN for
right. Well, and I mean, it's available at Barnes & Noble.
Yeah.
You can have it ordered through Barnes & Noble. It's not...
You can get your book?
You probably wouldn't find it in the store, but it's available on the Nook. It's available through them.
Oh, I remember when you released it, you said Nook. Yeah. That was important,
That was my last... Yeah, like, I wanted it on the Nook. I wanted it different availabilities, but...
You know what? Also, too, I know we talked about the independent bookstore, and please... Go out and support your independent bookstore.
Definitely.
We do not want to hate on them because...
Not even a little bit. No, I completely understood their point of view.
Trust us. And I know you enough to say this. If Amazon thing's great, but if you could see your book in an independent bookstore, that's a fucking big win.
Oh, man. Yeah.
So, go out and support them. But it's got to feel good, though, even though it's not independent, to have it... I mean, Barnes & Noble is the... Outside of Amazon, it's the second largest.
Sure.
But it's a brick and mortar, so that's a bookstore.
Yeah.
So that's got to feel pretty good, too.
Yeah.
So go see it. You know what? I encourage people more than anything to go to your Amazon or go to Barnes & Noble and say, I want to order a copy of this book.
That's what I want to do. That would be awesome.
I want to see you do that. So, hey, what's a percentage of the sale go toward you? And you don't have to give me the exact number, but
I get 60%.
No shit.
On ebook.
Okay. That makes sense.
On ebook. On paperback through Amazon, I get roughly almost 20%.
That's still pretty good.
No, definitely. I mean,
so if I bought it for $11, you get two and a quarter, something like that.
Right, or about $2 is what it shakes out to. But yeah, I mean, I don't pay anything for the paperback. I don't pay anything on the production of it for you if you order on Amazon. So that's all on them. So yeah, roughly 20%. I'm cool.
That's awesome.
Yeah,
that's awesome. So after Timberhaven, which is this book. Timberhaven's this book. We've already heard Juniper's book. What was the next one going to be called?
Monsters in the Park.
Monsters in the Park. Good name. Very good name. I like that name even better than Waking the Weaver.
Well, and it's not. So the part of the slog for me in making Waking the Weaver so far is that it's in first person. It's in a journal format, and that's not as. As a writer, that's not as freeing as... Because everything's from that character's perspective.
Okay.
So, Monsters in the Park is not. Monsters is in third person. So,
if you're telling a Michael Gideon story, it's going to be from his perspective?
Waking the Weaver is.
So, okay.
Moving forward, that might not be the case. Oh, but
if he's the... I mean, I feel like if he's the main character, that makes sense. But if he's not, you could go whatever you want.
Right. Well, and I mean, this is kind of my Hobbit. This is my lead into a Lord of the Rings situation. Because... Yes,
I get that. That makes sense.
It's the everyman going into this town where nothing makes sense, and he spends a lot of the book being like, nothing makes sense here, but as he comes to understand the ins and outs, hopefully the reader is understanding the ins and outs.
You know what? I was going to say this a while ago when I asked you about the small town thing being from the Midwest. I also feel like so when people like do movies like, for instance, End of the World with James Franco, Seth Rogen, all those guys in it, where they themselves they turn the volume up a little bit. So I don't want people to think we were the worst people in the world, but the struggling writer thing too with the I mean we drink a lot. There's a little bit of self-reflection in that too.
Oh, definitely. The Michael's love of bourbon is legit.
and I know this because I'm like I said, I'm close to flame. But you and Moeller used to get together once a year and do these writer retreats.
Right, we go on retreats
where you may have crawled into a bottle or two during those.
That's definitely happened.
Yeah. Yeah. So I mean, but that's you know. So you got to know. I just want I say that because I want to paint a picture for people that you're not getting a book, you're getting a person. You're getting a part of them. So, you know, I mean, I feel that's important too because I feel like anytime someone, and we talked on this a little bit earlier, but because of the podcast, I feel like I've gotten, if you know, I'm not getting into politics, but left-leaning, right-leaning, all that. Because of doing the podcast, I've become even more of a moderate,
mm-hmm.
and I find myself talking less and less on shit I don't like.
Right.
Because I feel like anytime someone puts themselves out there, anytime they give a part of themselves out to the world, I gotta respect it. I mean, I feel like shitting on it less. You know what I mean? So yeah. When you go and buy this book, and I encourage you to go buy the book, not just to support my buddy who eventually wants to quit his job. Like I don't know if this podcast will ever lead me to quit my job, but fucking review and rate on iTunes so I can one day. I feel like that's important. Go support, and you're not just buying pages, letters on a page, forming a paragraph, sentence, all that stuff. You're buying literally, we've already determined, over 10 years of your life into it. So that said, when do you see yourself branching away? Because I do know this. I do know, like, at one time, you've loved writing straight horror.
Yeah.
And when do you see yourself maybe jumping into that or is that on the horizon for you?
Yeah, I eventually. There's all kinds of irons in the fire,
which is good.
Yeah, I mean it can only help. There's going to be outside of Timberhaven novels. There's speaking of Daniel Moeller, we have a when we were young was going to be a comic book universe. But now has grown into a book minus the comic, so a pulp universe.
Okay.
Where basically growing up in a Midwestern town and all the dreams that we had and all these stories, this lifetime of stories, have kind of shaken out to this other universe of stories.
Kind of like a Cavalier and Clay kind of thing, if you've ever read that. I mean,
I haven't, people but
won the Pulitzer, dude. You need to check it out.
I guess I do.
So it's loosely based on Jerry Schuster and Joe Siegel and how they created Superman. But it was the two guys. It's very meta, where they created this world and all the things they had to deal with in a fictitious novel. So you know, it's awesome.
Yeah,
it's tough read. It's one of those things that are very well written, but also very hard to read because very light. You know, but anyway.
Yeah. But eventually, and on top. Besides that, I do plan on eventually writing, like I said, Michael Gideon, the protagonist in Waking the Weaver, is a best-selling horror novelist. I eventually plan on writing those horror stories with the pen name Michael Gideon.
That's a pretty cool plan. I think you focused on that earlier. That's a pretty cool plan.
It should be fun.
So, yeah. Well, we're on board, and you know what? We've already been talking over an hour.
Wow!
Just at an hour, so
I have a question.
Well, as always,
fire away.
But I wouldn't even call this your segment. You just throw your question out there.
Do you write every day, or try to write every day?
Ideally, I write every day, but typically, well, I mean, during the week, work week, Monday through Friday, I typically get about an hour after work, mm-hmm. where I focus it. Okay. And sometimes I write something, and sometimes I edit something, and sometimes I just jot some notes down. And then
that's still
I write
good.
More on the weekends. Yeah. So,
writer's got to write.
Do you keep paper with you in case an idea
I used
springs
to.
Up?
I used to keep. So Lauren used to put these little notebooks in my lunchbox so that I could mm-hmm. do that. But
well,
now
my wife used to leave me little notes, but she doesn't do that anymore. Yeah. The luster's gone from
it's
that
gone.
New car. Yeah.
The glow is off the rose.
That's it.
Sorry.
Now with the phone, I can pretty much just jot down anything on the phone. So yeah.
So I know you have said that you have authors that you really turn to, but do you have like a muse of some sort?
Other than myself.
Yeah.
I get it. Dude, you don't have to say
it. He is the monster.
You don't have to say it. You don't have to say it. I get it.
Basically just literature. Like anytime it's not even just literature, story in general. I can get moved by a song where it's like, oh, that gives me this idea and boom, boom, boom. But story in general is, definitely not in Waking the Weaver, but in Monsters in the Park, there's a cat that comes onto the scene named Story.
Is he Cheshire?
She is.
I'm just kidding.
Why does it have to be he?
You're right.
She
is a
brown tabby. No matter what Dusty says, because he's drawn her twice, and he always draws her as a black cat.
Well, he sucks sometimes. He'll listen.
But that she sums up my muse. My muse is like anytime, be it music, be it because Timberhaven is equally drawn in music as it is in story. Those are the two main pillars of Timberhaven stories, and so my muse is anywhere I get a story from. And so the character
so the world,
story
the world
is
pop culture in general. I mean music,
stories, movies.
A good story, a good movie.
Yeah.
I gotta tell you what, the phone things you and I showed you earlier, like at some point, whether I've already said this out loud on the podcast, and no, you won't be there, my wife won't be there. I'm going to go try to do an open mic and just do 5 minutes. I'm going to do it.
Yeah.
I'm going to do it. At some point.
I don't know how you're getting out of the house without knowing.
No, I'll tell you where I'm going. You just can't come with me. Because I can't see.
Are you
going
to take my car keys?
Well, I've heard from good stand-up comics, like guys that are real professionals and listen to podcasts, that don't let your friends and family be at your first handful because it'll ruin it.
I can see that. I mean, it friends and family actually, I mean, obviously, the numbers on my first book are almost entirely because of friends and family, but I could see where a performance situation you necessarily wouldn't want anybody.
And so for you, was it scarier to put your content out there for new people to read or for your family and friends to accept?
I had been sharing stories and even on Facebook, just the weird way my brain works long enough that I wasn't really, there was no fear there. To be honest, when the next book comes out, that's when I'll get real numbers. Cause I know a lot of people now, it's my first book,
yeah.
the friends, the family, they love me. They want it.
You're right.
They want it.
It's like
these numbers aren't real.
It's like the second, third episode of any TV show or comic book. At some point your friends and family are going to be like, oh, he did this before.
Right. The only
I'll get
people,
around to it at some point.
The only people there dig the content. So my fear now, I guess, if you want to paint it as a fear, is that eventually, once all this noise goes away, I'll put content out and nobody will
call it an insecurity, because that's what it is. I mean, it is a fear. It's fear of the unacceptance. But that's a fear that anybody that ever puts himself out there.
Sure.
Yeah.
Well, I know what's weird is I don't even mind, like, because, you know, a lot of people, you put your heart and your soul into this thing. And I definitely did that. But if I were to have, and I haven't yet, knock on wood, I'm sure I will, but I haven't had any detractors, but I'm sure I will. And that doesn't even, I'm not even sweating the anybody that comes along. It's like, you suck. You can't string a sentence together. You're horrible. Blah, blah, blah.
I can see all that.
Bug me. Yeah.
I'm just kidding. You definitely can write a sentence, buddy. No matter what anyone says, you can write sentences.
There you go. I'm cool now.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's, that my insecurity or fear is, yeah, that I'll, once all this goes, when the newness wears off, mm-hmm. that, yeah, it, I'm writing to a empty room, basically.
You know what, though? And I know it's not everybody's ideal, but sometimes you do have to write to an empty room. Sometimes you find out that an empty room may be your best critic, and that it causes you to get better, you know?
Yeah.
And you've got the first book out there. You've got the hurdle.
Right.
And you know, if to tie it to a combative sports analogy, like, you're not the champ until you defend the title. So you can only judge yourself by the second.
That's entirely true.
And even if
nobody's harsher than me anyway. So, like, as far as criticism goes, you're not pointing out anything that I haven't seen myself.
And you have to be your harshest critic.
Right.
Because if you can't please yourself, and that's not, you know, that's probably not 100% true, because there's probably people out there that still think that stand-up comics are authors that probably think that, God, they're so insecure.
Right.
But if you are not so at least pleased with yourself that you can release it, then you're never going to be successful.
Well, right.
You got to let it go.
Yeah, right.
I mean, the sad fact is, you got to let people judge you.
Yeah.
And that's it. You got anything else?
I do not.
So on this segment of throwing to Missy, you had nothing, but before that you did.
Oh, whatever.
I'm just kidding.
Asshole.
Yeah, I know. So that said, again, the book is Waking the Weaver, a Timberhaven novel. You can find that on Amazon. You can find that through Barnes & Noble on Nook. You can, you know what? You should. He's got a lot of upcoming things. And as they come up,
right.
We're going to keep talking about them and keep promoting them. And I hope at the very least, I hope over the next 4 to 5, 6 months, I hope between these shows and stuff you're doing,
yeah.
You're going to have to talk about this more and more. And I hope this helps, because I feel like, and correct me if I'm wrong, but I feel like this is the first step in having to really talk about it.
Yeah, no, well, yeah, definitely. As far as verbalizing, you know, this is what's happening. Boom, boom, boom. I've got to do this. Like, it's still kind of even though the first book's out, it's still kind of this weird.
The bloom is still on the rose.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that said, let's tell them again where they can find. Let's go to the Twitters for both the book, the Facebook page. You have Timberhaven on Facebook.
Timberhaven or Aaron Conaway, author, on Facebook.
On
my website is aaronconaway.me.
That's the one I always look at when I see stuff.
Yeah, that's where the newsletter comes out, come right? From. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
And then that's the first place that any of the like the Fridays in Timberhaven Before the Weaver type stuff.
Yeah.
Comes
buy
out.
The book. Go to aaronconaway.me and sign up for the newsletter. For lack of a better term, the newsletter.
Right.
That's where you release all the stuff every week. And yeah, go do all that. I mean. Not just because I'm promoting you as one of my best friends, the same way I promote, and I feel like I'm a broken record here. It's not because Josh Roberts is one of my best friends and I love dearly. It's literally the best comic book store in the country. I promise you, I've been to millions.
You cannot overhype that.
I would say between the two of us, we've been to 1,000 comic shops, and
easily.
His is literally the best one. So no matter. The humble beginnings of his show coming up in September, which you will in fact be there. You can actually see Aaron the weekend of September 29th at Springfield, Missouri, at CaveCon 2018. Look it up. It will be awesome. I'm going to be there probably doing everything I can to help both these guys in the worst way possible, because there's a good chance I'll be drinking. I'm lucky. I'm lucky for a guy that started a podcast out of nowhere, and I know that I'm probably, as Halpat would say, the only one narcissistic enough to do something like this. I do hope that you and I, from this weekend, can get together and figure out a way for you to figure out how you're going to do it.
Sure.
But I'm lucky, dude. I'm lucky because I got you, guys like you that are out there riding, guys like even Daniel that I could talk about out there riding, guys that I've recently met in St. Louis that own breweries, bars, they own comic stores like that. And just, I got to tell you, to go back to the, you can't choose your family, you can choose your friends. I feel like, you know, and I hope you feel the same way, that people that are successful or even people that are creative surround themselves by like-minded people. We got a good group of people.
It's solid, yeah.
And I'm glad we could be here to support you, and I hope everyone else does. And if you don't, I will literally come to your door, knock on the door, and put you right in the fucking throat.
Okay.
Go buy the book. At least sign up for the website to see what you can catch in the book and do that. But other than that, Aaron, we have nothing else to talk about. We're going to do a little bit more drinking.
Nothing. We're just going to sit in silence all night?
No, I got to tell you what. I got to tell you what. I want to play some games. We did eat a little while ago, but I can say that I've drank enough and had such an early enough dinner that I want to get some more food in me.
That's because you guys wanted to eat like Granny and Pawpaw at 3 o'clock.
That's okay, though. That's why we're old enough to make our own decisions. Came. Yeah. So, Aaron, any last thoughts or any last parting shots before we go?
Literally does not mean what he thinks it means.
No, yeah,
not punch you in the throat.
No. I've got plane tickets, frequent flyer miles. I signed up a year ago.
But I would very much appreciate you checking out Waking the Weaver and Timberhaven in general.
Yeah.
But otherwise, thank you guys for having me here.
And with that said, Melissa.
Bye.
Okay, we're playing the music. We're done. That's it.